Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
A top-level meeting will be held in Paris later today to address growing concerns over US efforts to end the war in Ukraine while cutting Europe out of the process. Emmanuel Macron will host the summit, which will be attended by other EU leaders, UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer, the head of NATO, and European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen. To discuss this, I'm joined now by Rosie Burchard, Europe correspondent for Deutsche Welle News, and David Dunn, professor in international politics at the University of Birmingham. Good morning to both of you. Rosie, can I start with you, please? This summit may be bolting the stable door while the horses disappeared well over the horizon. What do you think that they can do today that will make any difference? What's on the agenda?
Well, look, I mean, what a difference a few days makes in politics and in European security. We're just fresh out of the Munich Security Conference over the weekend, and there was a very clear message from Europe, from the US across the Atlantic, basically to Europe, saying more or less you're on your own. And I think this is an effort from French President Emmanuel Macron to try and get some heads together and coordinate a response and to try and work out what kind of leverage Europe can have as a continent to make sure that as the fate of Ukraine is decided, potentially in Saudi Arabia by US and Russian negotiators, that both Europe and Ukraine have a clear seat at that table moving forward. So they'll be looking at what kind of leverage they can have in terms of talking to the US, but also trying to put their heads together and work out how exactly they can do what they've been planning to do and talking about for years now, it should be said, which is to massively ramp up defence spending, not only in response to US demand, but also to try and respond to this rapidly shifting security architecture on this continent.
David, is the real meeting about the future of Ukraine tomorrow in Saudi Arabia between Russia and the US and not in Paris today?
Well, that's what the jockeying is about here. The Europeans are meeting to actually try and push back firmly against the messages they heard from Washington at the weekend. And it's interesting, Starmer, ahead of the meeting in Paris, has published a piece in the Daily Telegraph in the UK, actually challenging three of the things that Washington said. He said, you know, we shouldn't rule out NATO membership for Ukraine. He says they shouldn't do a deal over the heads of the Ukrainians, rather like the Americans did over Afghanistan. He said that would be a bad precedent. And thirdly, he says that actually American security guarantees for any force in Ukraine are essential. So he's saying, actually trying to push back at those messages and in a way to try and redefine the terms, to try to interject the Europeans into the diplomatic process that's going on between the Russians and the Americans directly, and to challenge that idea that it's either all been decided who the players are going to be, or indeed what the concessions are going to be given to the Russians beforehand. So in a sense, quite a bold move there to reshape the negotiating table.
We might try and re-improve the quality of your line there, David. Let me turn to you, Rosie. What we didn't talk about there was Keir Starmer's promise to pledge British boots on the ground, peacekeeping boots on the ground in Ukraine. Is that the main piece of leverage you think that European countries have in dealing with the US in trying to buy themselves a place at the talks table?
It's definitely one of the key pieces of leverage. And why is that? Because here at NATO headquarters just a few days ago, the US Defence Secretary was very clear in spelling out that US troops would not be part of any potential future peacekeeping force in Ukraine, and that any peacekeepers that he said should come from European countries and potentially non-European countries would not be protected by NATO's Article 5 guarantee. That's that collective defence pledge that says an attack on one is an attack on all. So essentially what Europe could offer here is saying, well, if you are looking for our troops to put our men and women on the line here, not being protected by a US security guarantee, then we need to be involved. We need to have a seat at that table. But there are other possible leverages or things that they can bring when they're for their talks with the US or in their coordination. For example, we're also looking at what could Russia want out of a potential peace deal. I mean, there's been plenty of accusations that the US has been essentially selling out Ukraine to Russia here, already spelling out some concessions Ukraine would have to make without specifying what concessions Russia might have to make. The US pushes back on that. But remember that Russia will want easing of European sanctions. And of course, those that key thing they'll want is those frozen assets, those Russian central bank assets. There are hundreds of billions of euros worth of them frozen in the European Union. And that's something that would be within the EU's hands. Of course, there have been successive rounds of sanctions on Moscow ever since its full-scale invasion of Ukraine back in 2022.
The United States, David, will of course want to see an increase in defence spending by European countries. How realistic is that? I was just reminded yesterday, looking at the projections from within the EU for what they're going to be able to spend in their budget for the next 7 years, that they're committing 20% of that spending to paying for the bill that arose from the COVID lockdown. There isn't a huge amount of spare cash swilling around the place, is there?
Yeah, there's two problems. As you say, there's the whole liability, the whole hangover from COVID and the debts that ran up with that. But there's also a real reluctance on some Europeans to spend more money. If you look at the frontline states, those that have borders with Russia, they have actually ramped up their defence spending considerably. And with Poland being the exemplar there, they've gone to 4% of GDP, and they plan to double the size of their army. But if you go further away from that, in Spain and in Ireland and in Italy, the defence budgets are tiny, and there's a historical reasons and a geographical reasons why they don't feel the same degree of threat or the same degree of willingness to spend money on the militaries and be involved in a real way in terms of the security provision of the continent as a whole. So there's a real division when it comes to that, and trying to get consensus on that will be a real challenge. Britain and France have historically been major military powers, but even then they've allowed their armed forces to dwindle, and the size of their armies in particular to be at historically low levels. So there's a real challenge in terms of actually getting everyone to do the same thing and to get from where we are to where we need to be if the Americans are really not to be relied upon.
Yeah, David, can I get your assessment on this idea of boots on the ground and how realistic it can be achieved? Because there's one projection here that it would take up to 100,000 personnel from around Europe with a very, very long-term commitment to be an effective buffer against Russian aggression. Can Europe's combined armed forces actually achieve that, do you think?
Well, there's a whole variety of questions that go with that. In terms of actually, the numbers are a challenge. And again, they've been even figured 10,000. Remember that for every 10,000
David,
I'm going to interrupt you again,
I'm afraid, because the line is just getting worse and worse and worse. I might actually throw that question to Rosie, if I could, please. 100,000 troops is the projection over many, many years. How realistic a commitment is that, do you think, Rosie?
Well, I think, I'll just echo what I think David was trying to start saying there, which is that there are so many questions to be answered before we would even get to that stage of what kind of form this would take. Would it need a UN decision? Who would be involved? Which countries? But there's no doubt, as David pointed out, that, the European militaries, some of them are really in the position of looking to try and recruit new people. So in terms of whether they can step up and provide troops and in what numbers, that's a question for further down the line. I think what's going to be much more front and centre in these talks in Paris today is how to get to a position where any decisions on potential things like peacekeeping forces, like boots on the ground, like who is involved, is not taken without those countries that are expected to cough up on troop numbers actually being involved and being the ones designing these future security guarantees.
David, back on a different line, hopefully much improved. Yeah. Has Putin effectively gotten everything that he wants here? Has this aggression actually won for him?
Well, certainly what he's got is 20% of Ukrainian territory. He has got the areas of Ukraine that are rich in rare earth metals and in iron and coal deposits. So it's the most valuable part of that. He's got and looks like he's going to keep the Crimean Peninsula and therefore access to a warm water port. And what he's got is a sense of victory that actually his aggression has paid off. Now, of course, what he's also claimed is the territories of Donetsk, Kherson, Luhansk and Zaporizhia that he hasn't actually yet occupied, but he has claimed those as Russian sovereign territory. And the problem with that is actually he has stated that they are part of Russia and that he wants those irrevocably. But he's also talked about Ukraine not being a proper state, as being part of the civilizational state of Russia, and therefore he wants to reclaim that, and at the very least wants the Ukraine to be a pacified, neutral vassal state on his borders. And of course, what he said about Ukraine, he's also said about Georgia and Moldova and the Baltic republics. So the concern in Europe is that having rewarded him for his aggression in this way and having given an indication that, on the American part that he won't defend Europe, let alone Ukraine, against him, given that their focus is on Asia and America first, the fear is that this actually just gives Putin an indication of the need to rebuild his arsenal and come back later for more territory, because his aims have not changed. And that's the big concern here. The concern of the European meeting in Paris is that this is not about Ukraine. This is about Russia. And you can't solve the Ukraine problem and think the problem has gone away if the Russia problem still maintains.
David Dunn, Professor in International Politics at the University of Birmingham, and Rosie Burchard, Europe correspondent for Deutsche Welle News. Thank you both very much. After the break, should more primary schools develop outdoor classrooms?
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.